Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and joining me today is Linda Fitzgerald. Linda has been writing since she was 10 years old, and by the time her first novel was published, she'd written 7 full-length novels, a host of short stories, and a number of articles. She studied creative writing at both Georgia Perimeter College and at Emory University. Her debut novel, If Truth Be Told, was released by 5-star Cengage in June of 2007. Her second novel, Of Words and Music, hit the bookstores in March of 2009. Both of these are now out on Kindle. And her third novel, the first in a mystery series, is scheduled to be released in both paperback and ebook in the spring of 2010, and that is right now. So I know there was some delays on this book, but it should be hitting the shelf within weeks. So I'm glad we're getting a chance to talk with Linda right as it's hitting the shelves. Linda is a member of Mystery Writers of America, Atlanta Writers Club, Sisters in Crime, and the Florida Writers Association. And you can find out more about Linda and her work at FitzgeraldWrites.com. So welcome to the program, Linda.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so Live Ringer, your new book, is it on shelves? I know there was delays. Where are we at right now?
Well, the publisher now says April 1st, so that's still spring, so we're still in the ballpark.
Oh, good. So what is it like as an author waiting to get that final copy in hand and on shelves? I know it's very common to have last-minute due date pushbacks.
Well, it is, especially in today's world. I just got a message from my publisher that some of the books that have already been edited are not going to be released, at least not now. So yeah, it's exciting. It's a several step process. The first is when you get that Library of Congress registration number, the ISBN, and that makes it seem real. And then you get your cover art, and that may be the most exciting thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, you get to hold the book in your hands, and I love that moment.
That's great. Did you have a choice in the cover art?
We have a little bit of input, but we've had some great snafus, too. On this last one, I sent a synopsis of the story and everything to the publisher, and it came back. They gave me 3 options, and all 3 of them had the skyline of Manhattan behind them. And this book takes place, the whole story takes place in a small beach town in Florida, so I sent back and said, it's wonderful, except, Dave, you got it in the wrong location.
Yeah.
I fixed it.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
what book were they thinking?
Yeah, really, whose book was this?
So from what I understand, you've been writing for over 30 years. Tell us a little bit about the evolution of your writing career and why it just happened in 2007 that you started publishing.
Well, I tried to publish earlier, and it's kind of a funny thing, and a lot of writers send out their first book, they get a bunch of rejections, and they say, I'm not good enough. And I don't know if it was ego or just determination, but to get published, you've got to have that determination. It's got to be vitally important to you. I wrote my first novel, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew it was the best thing that had ever been written. It was just, I knew it was brilliant. I could not wait for publishers to fight over getting it. Got the rejections, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, after, maybe 50, 100, I can't remember how many rejections, I said, okay. Because back then, we were sending out the whole manuscript. You didn't query. You didn't send a synopsis. They wanted to see the whole manuscript.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets expensive when it's a 300-page manuscript. So I finally said okay and shelved it and wrote my second one, which was trash, wrote my third one, and that was the first one that was published, and I hear that's very common that your second or third novel is the one they pick up, not your first one. But it still took a lot of time to get that one placed.
Absolutely. So do you think it sounds to me like it's almost a bit of an initiation phase that authors have to go through with the rejection and with the writing of a few books before they really kind of get the flow of the whole process up
in
their belt.
And find their voice, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very important. I actually pulled that first novel out recently and was reading through it, and I thought, oh, this is crap. I can't believe I wrote that.
Isn't that great that you are open-minded enough to critique your own writing?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was just a shock that I would write dialogue that wouldn't. And, I mean, there were no descriptions in it. These people had only two senses. They could only see and hear. They didn't feel. They didn't smell. Nothing. And I thought, how could I have thought that was brilliant? But, you know, when you're a youngster and you're writing this, it seems good. I was just excited that I had finished a novel. And all during the time that I was writing it, I thought, what if I can never write a second novel? Well, now I've got ideas for the next four or five novels. I just don't have the time to write them.
That time thing.
Uh-huh.
Wow, I know. So you actually, you know, you talk about years ago writing. You studied creative writing at Georgia Perimeter College. I believe you got a scholarship there, and then at Emory University. So how important is the whole formal education process to writing?
I don't think you can learn enough about writing. I wish I had started, that I had focused my education on writing in elementary school and started reading things then. It is not the end all. It's vitally important, but you learn to write by writing. That is the reason it's cliche is because it's true. It's always been true. But the you can learn so many tips from classes. You know, I teach classes now at different places on creative writing. But I still take classes because it seems like from every class I take, I get a few gems that help me in my own writing. And critique groups are also good. They can help you learn a lot.
So how does a critique group, what is the formula for that? How does a group like that critique each other? How does it work?
Well, with ours, there are a lot of different, I think there are as many different ways as there are critique groups, but we formed a Yahoo online group, and everyone submits, we choose two people each month, and they can submit 20 to 25 pages. We want them to do it 2 weeks ahead, and that way we've got time to really look at it and send back an in-depth critique. A lot of them just bring something to the meeting and read it, and it's critiqued on the spot, but I don't think you get a really professional level critique doing it that way.
Mm-hmm. And so as a teacher, when you're teaching classes, are there some common themes, common questions, common topics that would-be aspiring writers really want to know about?
Well, one of the funniest ones, invariably, it's how do you get published.
Oh, yeah.
That is a given with any writing class. And I have to tell them, not only me, but every author I've talked to, it's kind of a crapshoot, you know?
Yeah.
You've got to hit the right acquiring editor on the right day when they're in the right mood and they need that particular thing for their list. It sounds impossible and it is difficult, but it can happen. I've got a lot of friends that didn't wait to be picked up. They self-published, and that's almost, I hate to say it, but it's kind of a kiss of death in the writing area, because some bookstores won't even allow signings for self-published authors.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them could have gotten published if they had been patient, but their work wasn't ready yet, and they weren't willing to look at that.
Oh, that's a really good point.
I mean, think if I had self-published my first novel, which was entitled Our Ideal, that would be out there forever. And it was awful. If somebody could have read that and never read anything else I ever wrote,
mm-hmm.
you know, say, oh, she writes garbage, and not ever pick up any of my other books.
So do you think that there's a certain amount of humility that you have to have as an author?
Well, you're going to get it whether you want it or not.
Right.
This Live Ringer, you know, I sent it, and it had been critiqued. I had a professional editor that I hired go over it. It had been critiqued to death. Still, the editor came back with a lot of changes that were good. I mean, she was right. There was a lot of repetition in the book, blah, blah, blah. I went back and spent 2 weeks making changes to it. It's a stronger book now.
Mm.
I mean, but you have to, you cannot, I've got a friend who has written seven novels, is not published because she won't give it all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to her it's going to be that way or no way at all, and I'm afraid it's going to end up being no way at all.
No way at all. So a professional editor then is a huge, huge step. step. So you're what you're saying, don't get your friends or family to edit.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it does, I mean, I won't do that with every book. I did it with this one because I love this book, and it's the first in a mystery series, so I really wanted it to be the best, the absolute best that I could do. And she gave me the editor that I hired gave me, but it's very expensive, folks, but the editor I hired gave me some wonderful suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
So it was worth every dime that I paid for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you probably will really carry a lot of what you learned just from that experience into your next work.
Well, yes, and that's another reason that the cliche, you know, you learn to write by writing, and yes, by having people edit. But when you write that first one, the next book you write, you're going to have a lot better idea of how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
With If Truth Be Told, which was my first published novel, I spent 8 years writing that. Now, not, you know, 5 days a week every day because I worked full time, so it was nights and weekends. And I got halfway through it, and I did not outline this book. Got halfway through and didn't know where to go. I knew where I wanted to end, but it had gone off so far off track that I ended up having to rewrite most of the first half.
Mm.
And that was the last book I didn't outline.
Okay.
Yeah, now I outline. And, you know, you don't stick with the outline. It's a very broad general outline, but I can see if I'm getting off track.
Yeah, it keeps
and
you on.
Yeah, so Live Ringer actually took me about 8 months to outline and about 6 weeks to write, and then of course I spent another, you know, several months editing.
Mm-hmm.
So I really do recommend outlining. It does not stifle creativity. It keeps you going where you need to go.
That's a good point, because I think, you know, there may be some authors out there that think that cuts out their freedom, that puts them in a box, and they don't like that.
Well, and I understand that. If it's a writer who sits down to a blank page, has no idea what he or she is going to write or how the story is going to end, then outlining wouldn't work, of course. But I always know how a story is going to end before I start writing it. I think the ending is what inspires me to write the novel.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think an author should have a time limit on a book, how long it should take from start to finish?
Nope, I don't. I'm delighted that I wrote the second one in this mystery series, it's already written, and it's actually being reviewed by some other authors. And it, again, took me about, I would say 2 months to outline, about maybe 8 weeks to write, and then I've been editing it. So I could actually claim that it took me 3 years to write.
Mm.
But it didn't, because I haven't worked on, you know, I had to stop to do the edits on Live Ringer. And so, no, I think each book is going to kind of dictate how long it takes to write. My one big thing is don't keep going back to make the first part perfect, because when you get to the end of the book, there's a very good chance the first part's going to change. When you start a novel, you don't know your characters very well. By the time you get to the end, you know them intimately. And some of the things that they did or said, or some things that happened at the beginning, may very well change.
Mm, great point.
Yeah.
Really good point. Now, this Live Ringer, it's the first in your live series, and
uh-huh.
You're going into the mystery genre. Now, you started off basically as a women's fiction writer.
And I think this is still women's fiction, although the guys that have read it again have liked it. I think there's always a common thread through any author's writing, whether it is character-driven or plot-driven. You're going to find that one little thing that is in each novel that they write. And mine is that I write women's fiction. It's mystery. The first one they called romantic suspense, I thought that was women's fiction. Second one they called women's fiction, so we got the genre right on that one.
Mm-hmm.
This one really is mystery, but it is the female characters are vitally important to the story.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll stay throughout the whole series.
The series. So how is it taking on an entire series at this point after you've just basically been writing standalone novels for your whole writing career?
Well, this was going to be a standalone novel. I had no idea it was going to be a series. I got to the end of it and said, oh, no, there are things that have to happen to these people. So that's how it became a series. I had no intention of writing a series when I started. Okay. There are some dilemmas. In the second book, I don't know how much to give away from the first book because I want the readers to go back and read the first book, you know, if they like the second one. So that's the hardest thing for me is how much do I give away about book one? And when I write book three, how much of book two am I going to give away? Because some of it's relevant, you know, as the story moves forward. But I don't want to give away the ending of the previous book. So
that's a challenge.
It is a challenge, and it's a good learning experience. I'm enjoying that a lot.
Absolutely. Now, is it true that you were a chronic exaggerator as a child?
Blatant liar.
Oh, that's even better.
Well, it's true. I was. And the funny thing is I've got a granddaughter now who is showing all the signs of being a future fiction writer because she'll fictionalize anything. She'll even get herself in trouble like I used to, where if I had told the truth, I wouldn't be in trouble. But I made up stories all the time. And, I mean, I would drive past the house and see the lights in the window. And by the time we were two blocks down the street, I had made up life stories for people that lived in that house. So I think that a lot of kids that either exaggerate or lie, like I did, and I did both, really just have so much creativity, they've got to use it in some way. And mine ended up, thank heaven, starting at about the age of 10, turning into fiction. So
I imagine for parents, you know, if they see that in their child, instead of thinking it's a negative, help their kids channel it properly.
Exactly. And I've done that with my granddaughter. She's written like four or five short stories now and wants to write a novel.
Wow.
So that's very exciting to see her start to, because my daughter didn't know what to do with her. You know, it's like, Mom, what am I going to do with this child? She's lying all the time. I said, help her write.
Yeah.
That's what you do. Channel it into something that's constructive instead of destructive.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So we talked a little bit about Live Ringer just abstractly. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about the book and where you're going with this series?
Okay. The main character ends up being an investigative reporter, but she had a reporter's background, but had no intention of doing anything with it. She's coming out of a divorce when the book opens, the first book. She was married to a diplomat who was stationed in Brussels, and she was really no more than like a decorative appendage for him. And when her marriage blows up, right about the same time that her aunt dies, she inherits her aunt's beach house in Cape Canaveral, Florida, and $2 million. She had no idea her aunt was wealthy because her aunt didn't live like a wealthy woman. So all she wants to do is come to this beach house and recover from, you know, her aunt's death, which she knew she had Hodgkin's. She had no idea how seriously ill she was. And her marriage, which she's not the kind of person to take a divorce lightly. And within 24 hours, she stumbles on a body down at the Cape Canaveral jetty. Allie, at the beginning of this series, somebody said she's a weak character. She's not a weak character. She's a hurting person. She's gone through a lot. And it's funny, this book has a dog in it that was her aunt's. Her aunt rescued this little Lhasa Apso named Spook, and that's because everything spooks him. He's terrified of everything, just like Allie is kind of terrified of life. And there's actually a common thread running through Spook becoming more courageous and Allie finding herself after what's happened to her. And that's why at the end of it, yeah, she's beginning to come into her own, and so is the dog. But she's not there yet. And her friends, there's a lot that's going to happen in their lives. So I had a ball writing this book, and the people that have reviewed it have said you can tell. It was fun to write. The characters are funny. The things that happen are serious but not so gory that you've got to put the book down if you happen to be eating lunch while you're reading. But mainly it's fun. I had, you know, all the things I've written, like the first one they said was romantic suspense, well, that was partly a true story.
Mm-hmm.
So the second one was based on something that happened in my life. Live Ringer is totally out of my head. I mean, I was sitting on the Cape Canaveral jetty one day, and I was looking down at the rocks and how the water swirls through them, and I thought, oh, what if I looked down and thought I saw a fish and it was really an arm? And that's how that story was born. That's how those characters were born. They're you know, based on their composites like most fictional characters are.
Uh-huh.
But I had a total blast.
That's fantastic. Now, I know you added some supernatural elements to this one.
Well, they are, I guess. Her aunt, who died, starts carrying on conversations with her in her head. And I really based this character on, whose name is Lou, on my own Aunt Lou, who I still carry on conversations with. Now, mine, I know, are imagination. Allie thinks hers are at the beginning, but then her aunt starts telling her a few things that Allie couldn't possibly have known, and she says, I'm carrying on conversations with this person in the hereafter. So she doesn't mind as long as that person's her aunt, but you know, she's very skeptical at the beginning. And her aunt's a big character in the book.
Oh, that's great.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. I'm talking today with Linda Fitzgerald. She is the author of the new book, Live Ringer, which is the first in her live mystery series, and it's out on multimedia publications. You can find out more about Linda through her website, FitzgeraldWrites.com. And so I think from what I understand, the family really comes into play in the following books.
Yeah, they do, and I'll tell you what I've noticed. This is a good thing. A writer learns about themselves by writing. All of my books are focused on family dynamics. Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting, and without consciously going there.
Without in any way consciously going there. It wasn't until I finished writing Live Ringer and started on Live Ammo that I said, oh, I always have family dynamics in my novels. Not everyone does. I mean, sometimes you think the person came out of Zeus's forehead or something, you know?
Yeah. What do you think that is, Linda?
I don't have a clue, except my family's very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably, it has a whole lot to do with it.
Mm-hmm. It might be a subject or a topic that is kind of weaning itself out of a lot of literature these days, the family. It's more individual, independent characters.
Yeah, and I don't think we function in a vacuum. You know, we've got families, even if they aren't alive anymore. We have families. That defines, in large part, what we are. And I think that's where this is coming from with me.
That's so interesting. Now, there are going to be, what, 5 or 6 books in this series?
Yeah, at least.
At least?
Yeah. Well, I've outlined, let's see, vaguely, I'm talking, you know, a paragraph. I've outlined books 3 through 5 and have a kind of an idea for 6, but I don't know that that ends it. You know, so I haven't gone any further. I'm focusing on the ones right now, the editing the second one, writing the third one.
Mm-hmm.
So, goodness, I hope the series is all picked up because they'll be written.
Well, you're getting some great reviews for Live Ringer, the sort of pre-reviews. So, I mean, I think you're really onto something. You're having a good start here so far.
Yeah, that's great. And I have. You're right. I've been kind of astounded with the reviews I've gotten.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you've really honed your craft, and so it's showing up in how people are responding to your book. So it's fantastic. Now, you're back in Florida for Live Ringer. Tell us a little bit how important setting is for you and how important it is to this particular book.
Well, setting is another character. The first novel I wrote was set in Melbourne Beach, Florida, which is a place that I stayed every summer while I was growing up. We just went over there, and we were there for the entire summer. So I fell in love with the area, and that's, like I said, where the first novel that was published took place, if truth be told. Then I wrote one that set in Atlanta, only because, and I live in Atlanta now, only because it fit here. It worked here.
Mm-hmm.
But when I started writing Live Ringer, of course, the first scene, or the first in the first chapter, she finds the body at the Canaveral jetty. That she loves the beach the way Allie loves the beach, the way I love the beach. In fact, it's funny, I'm headed down to Florida tomorrow, but it kind of defines her. Mm. It grounds her. So the setting is very important there, just like being in Florida is very important to me.
Mm-hmm. When you are writing, is that constantly kind of the foundation of your writing, the setting?
Yeah, it is. And it's funny, I've got maps on my office wall of Melbourne Beach, all the streets and everything. So
wow.
All those streets are real. All the businesses that I talk about are real.
So will you be doing some book promo down in Florida then?
Oh, I'm sure I will be doing a lot of signings. I like you said, I belong to the Florida Writers Association, and they are very supportive of their writers. So, yeah, I'll be doing some stuff down there. I'll probably be doing some stuff in Atlanta, and who knows where else. This new publisher does a little bit of, helps the author a bit with their promotion, which is wonderful. Not all publishers do that.
That's multimedia.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Multimedia publications.
That's great. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the professional organizations. You just touched on this subject. You know, I think it's something that, you know, some authors really, really go for, find that being a part of these organizations really is beneficial, and then others just, you know, they aren't interested. So where do you stand?
Yeah. Well, I think it's totally beneficial. It's some of the groups, online groups, are a bit of a time waste, but they're also opportunities. So any author that's, you know, still has, is on the fence about joining professional organizations, I would recommend it. The Atlanta Writers Club just recently recommended me as one of the authors at the Dahlonega Literary Festival, and I was there with William Rawlings and Catherine Coulter and a bunch of other authors who I might not have met had I not gone to this. And I wouldn't have gone to this if the Atlanta Writers Club hadn't recommended me. So each of them help you in your writing. They help you in your making contacts. And I think it's a wonderful thing. The Florida Writers Association, I don't get down there for meetings very often. Atlanta Writers Club, I try to attend their meetings. Sisters in Crime has an online group that they're always enabling you to get your stuff out there. You know, they'll say, you know, we've got a conference coming up if you want to send your flyers or, you know, a book, a signed book for us to raffle off. And those are opportunities to make new contacts with new readers. So, yeah, I think it's vital. The online groups, I you know, I do a daily digest sort of thing, and if I have time, I look at them. And if not, I keep them until I have time. So, but I found a lot of marketing opportunities through them, too, to get my books and trifolds and things like that with information about my books out.
That's great. I think that for a lot of authors, they wonder if the time spent is going to equal book sales in the long run. But, you know, maybe indirectly it does.
Well, I think it even does more than that. I think the time spent is minimal, and the exposure to your work is huge.
So how does a new author, new writer getting into an organization, how can they make the most of their experience and make sure that they're just not wasting time with an organization that really isn't pushing them forward in any way?
Well, first you've got to look at the results. I joined Florida Writers Association because I am a Floridian. I was born there, and I write about Florida. And in the first conference that I attended, which was not terribly expensive, actually, I met people who have invited me to speak in Jacksonville, Florida. They've got their online bookstore, where people can go and buy your book. It just offers so much.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at what you're getting for the time you're spending, and I make sure that everything they're doing is good and on the up and up, and then I'm willing to invest some time in it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, how about the whole internet presence, social networking? How important is really establishing an internet base to you?
Well, the website is vital. You've got to have your website out there. It's a good idea to have a couple of domain names and link them to your main website. So if people are searching for you, they're going to find you there. So at least one of them should be your name. And I've got one that's just my name and one that's Fitzgerald Writes, which is my main website.
Mm-hmm.
I think the internet presence is vital. I detest the time I need to spend on websites, updating stuff, and yet that's how people find you.
Yeah.
So I actually had a guy that was that emailed me cold and said that he was, a promoter of authors and blah, 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 blah. First thing I did, which most people I think these days do, is go in and Google him.
Yeah.
And there was one hit. And I said, okay, this guy either hasn't been in the business long or is not on the up and up. And I emailed him back and I said, I'm surprised that as many years as you say you've been in the business, there was only one hit for your name. And he said, I keep all my hits for my authors. And I'm thinking, oh.
So, needless to say,
I didn't pursue that.
I guess not. Well, that's an interesting topic, too, because I think that there is probably quite a bit of individuals out there looking to take advantage of authors and writers that really, really just need some help getting recognized. And so, I mean, that's interesting that you had that. What kind of advice can you give to authors that may experience that?
Well, again, I think Google is one of the greatest tools that we've got now. I Google everything and everybody, including myself, because a lot of times people do reviews that I'm not aware they're doing them. And if I Google, my name, it'll pull up anything that has popped with my name, and I'll find out. Like, I didn't submit anything to Romance Reviews Today or something like that, anyway, with my first novel. But I saw that they had done a review on the book and gave it a bunch of stars, and I thought, isn't that wonderful? I wish I had known that. So now I do it, maybe once a month or so, just to see if anything new is there that I'm not aware of. But there are plenty of good promotional sites. I use ReaderViews, which I think is one of the best. They're reasonable. They know what they're doing. That's pretty much the only one I use for promotion, although I'm on a lot of sites like Authors Den and Red Room and a lot of author sites, just because it's fun to do it. You got your books up there, and it just feels good.
Yeah, so make sure, I guess, when you are pursuing online interests like that, make sure that there is some longevity with the company or the person, and there is some proof in the pudding.
Right, absolutely.
Good, great advice. So what are some of the other things that are encompassing your life, loves of your life, aside from writing? I mean, I'm sure that this is pretty much taking up every minute of your day at this point.
It is, but I'm a very big dog person. If you go on my website, you'll see that. I have always rescued dogs. I had at one time 3 Karen Terriers. Don't anybody do that. Karen Terriers are Looney Tunes.
Oh,
you don't want 3 of them in your house at once.
It's a handful.
But I lost 2 of them, one to cancer and one to just old age and life. So I still got one of my Karen Terriers and went out and rescued a German Shepherd because that's the dog I had when I was younger. That was my favorite breed. and she is amazing. And now I've got two rescue German Shepherds and my one Karen Terrier, and they are just live entertainment. We recently had like 5 inches of snow, and I was outside throwing snowballs for the dogs, and they would chase them and catch them in the air and eat them. I mean, you cannot be down in the dumps when you've got a dog like that.
No, absolutely. So, they really enrich your life, don't they?
They certainly do, more than maybe any other single thing. And I've got grandkids that I love and kids that I love, and I love to play out in the yard, you know, doing the easy part, not the hard part.
Yeah.
Flowers and things like that. So I have so many interests. I used to do a lot of sewing. I don't do a lot of that anymore, but oh, it's fun. I love decorating. I probably couldn't think of them all right now. I love music.
How important is it for you as a writer to really take time out where you're not writing and just really getting into other creative pursuits, or just really doing something that is totally in the opposite direction of anything that has to do with writing?
Well, I think it's vital. I do a lot of my pre-writing while I'm doing other stuff. You know, I'll be out maybe pruning a rose bush or something, and I'll have this incredible idea and run in the house and write it down and then come back out. But I think you come back to it fresh and renewed if you have other interests. Again, I've got a friend who does nothing but write, and I couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's more to life than just writing, although writing is my total passion. If I had to identify one passion in my life, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got lots of interests, and I think that makes you a better writer.
Mm-hmm. I imagine that tunnel vision as a writer could really just be the death of creativity.
Yeah, and it will burn you out, too.
True.
You know, when I was doing the edits on Live Ringer, for 2 weeks, by the end of it, I thought, I hate this book. I emailed that to my daughter, and she said, of course you hate it. You've done nothing else for 2 weeks. You're going to love it again after a week.
Get out in the garden for a while.
Right, absolutely. Go play with the puppies, which is exactly what I did.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think tunnel vision can burn you out very badly. You don't have anything fresh to bring to your writing. I read a lot, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps me bring, you know, I'll look at this and I'll think, oh, I could have done that with this book. So I think you get a lot of your ideas not from their plots or characters, but from the way they craft their novels.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. So do you read all types of genres, or basically what you write?
Well, that changes over the years, you know. Right now I'm reading a lot of mystery, only because it's so much fun. I think the rest of the world is reading a lot of mystery, too.
Mm.
Not because it's what I write, but I think if you write what you love, you write it better. So right now, you know, I went through my period of reading nothing but the classics. I thought that made me special, I think. But I'll tell you what, Jane Austen has really influenced my writing. Mark Twain has really influenced my writing. And I think those are the two biggest influences on what I've always written.
Very interesting. So, Linda, it's been great talking with you again today. Let's mention your website again. It's Fitzgerald Writes. And so your books can be purchased through your site, or what can we find up there?
Well, you're going to find excerpts from each of the novels.
Okay.
You'll find the covers of the existing novels. And by the way, my first one just went on Kindle. And it's really nice because it's selling for $5.95 instead of the $26.95
that
the publisher sold the hardback for. So it's there if anybody's interested. I think you also said that Of Words and Music, we're getting it on Kindle right now. It is not quite ready.
Oh, okay.
But probably by the time, you know, anybody looks for it, it will be there.
Okay.
So there's pictures of my dogs, of course. There's a page on there called A Love Affair, and it really talks about my love affair with Melbourne Beach and Sebastian Inlet and those areas down there. So, and it's got a lot of really good pictures of that area. It's such a beautiful place.
Fantastic.
But there's little book trailers for each of my novels on there, little, you know, videos to kind of tell a little bit about it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole lot of stuff on there.
There really is. Are you blogging?
Well, I do a little, mainly on Author's Den or Red Room, one of those. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also have calendar events or upcoming events link up there. I know you are going to be in Phoenix at some point for a book signing this spring.
Right. It'll probably be in the summer, which is, I guess, is masochistic, but it'll probably be summer before I can get there, and I'll be signing at Poison Pen Bookstore, which is a wonderful bookstore. It's strictly a mystery bookstore. So it's a great one. I'll also be down at Sleuth Fest in Miami this weekend, which is a mystery writers conference.
Great.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. And then I'm hoping to make Malice Domestic, which is in Arlington, Virginia, in late May.
Wow, you really are doing some traveling.
Oh, yes. I enjoy it.
As long as for
the books, I love it.
You love it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Linda, it's been just so great talking with you again today, and I just really hope the best for Live Ringer. I know we will talk again when your second book comes out. You're in the editing process right now. So
absolutely.
I'm sure within the next year, you probably want these books to be coming out every year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a perfect schedule.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Linda, you take care. All the best on your travels and your book signings and your conferences. And just really appreciate you sharing your time with us today. Did you have any final thoughts for our audience?
If you're a reader, read everything. You never know what's going to kick you. I actually read an Ann Perry series on World War I, and I've never read a war novel before in my life, and it was fabulous. They're actually mysteries. If you're a writer, write. And if you can't think of an idea for a story or a novel, then write character sketches or anything that catches your attention. Write something down about it. Write an article. Write nonfiction. So I guess that's my advice.
Never know where it will take you. Well, thank you so much. Thanks, Linda. You take care.
I will. Thanks, Juanita.
Okay.
Have a great day.
You too. All right, listeners, that's been Linda Fitzgerald. Her new book, Live Ringer, the first in her live series, is hitting shelves any day now in the spring of 2010, so please look for it. Linda's website is FitzgeraldWrites.com, and I really recommend that you go to it. She has a lot of information up there about her work, her upcoming events, and all of that. So do check it out. So I want to thank you for tuning in once again to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.